Hey, Roxy.
Hey, James.
How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know why?
Why?
Because Creepy Kingdom has officially launched a Patreon account.
Patreon? What's Patreon?
Well, let me tell you, Patreon is a way that the listeners of the show can support us.
So, like a Kickstarter?
Not exactly. Kickstarter only is a one-time thing. On Patreon, our listeners can support us every month. And in exchange for them supporting us, we will give them special, super awesome prizes.
How much do they have to pay to support us?
They can pay whatever they want. You could pay $1 a month. You could pay $10, $100. It's up to them.
That's really cool. So how can Creepy Kingdom fans find this Patreon thing?
Well, you could go to creepykingdom.com and check the show notes on our recent episodes, or you could go to patreon.com/creepykingdom. That's patreon.com.
I'm going to go check it out right now.
Me too.
Monster Movie Media presents...
Greetings and welcome to episode 116 of the Creepy Kingdom Podcast. A podcast all about the creepiness of the Disney films and theme parks. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. Coming up in this episode is part two with my conversation with Rick West from Theme Park Adventure. In this installment, we discuss what it was like to cover the building and opening of the Indiana Jones Adventure attraction at Disneyland. And we also discuss the future of Universal Studios Hollywood and so much more. You're going to want to listen to this. Good stuff's coming up. If you haven't heard part one yet, that's okay. It's not really that chronological. You can still listen to this one and then go back and listen to the other one. Or you can listen to the other one first. Whatever you want to do, it's up to you. Before we get started, I would just like to mention that the documentary that I am currently working on, called Foolish Mortals, about Haunted Mansion fans, we are currently still very hard at work making this film. But to do have a little bit of news is that we have officially launched our own store where you can pre-order the DVD and get your hands on the brand new Foolish Mortals t-shirts. You, of course, can check all that fun stuff out by going to foolishmortalsdoc.com. And now, without any further ado, let's begin.
So I just realized... And this is, let's just make it very clear. This is after having a Manhattan, not before, but this is after having a Manhattan, that James has been recording me with the internal microphone from my Mac and not the microphone that I have plugged into the Mac. And holy crap, I guess it sounds different, right?
Yes, yep, it sounds...
Oh, my God.
A little clear. Yep.
Ay, 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 ay. So, kids, there you go. So we recorded 50 minutes of TPA history, and it probably sounds like it was recorded in 1994 versus 2017. But it's okay. The alcohol's flowing, and now we know what the problem was. Now it sounds like we're in 2017.
Yep, to get our history lesson, we had to go back to the older technology. So now we're
Jesus. Not only did I bore them with TPA history, it sounded like it was recorded in the 90s. My God! Sorry, everybody.
Which would have been with a little micro recorder, right? Is that what?
if that.
Or did you have a bulky tape recorder that you used to?
What did I record with back then? You know, so it would have been. So in the 90s, I did an interview when we did our Pirates book. We did an interview with Mark and Alice Davis, and that process took about 5 hours, and it was on a micro cassette, dictaphone is what they were called,
right?
And somewhere I think I have those cassettes. What would be really cool would be to digitize all those and have somebody clean them up and put those like on YouTube or something and have Mark Davis be able to hear, you know, hours of Mark Davis talking in his own words about pirates. That would be pretty rad. I just don't know how those little micro cassettes have held up after all this time in storage.
Well, it's worth a shot because I think that'd be amazing.
That would be pretty rad, right?
Yeah. Have you ever thought about doing a podcast?
Yeah, for about 2 minutes. For about 2 minutes, and I go, yeah, I really don't have time. So it was really funny. Today at work, I was mentioning that I was going to do this podcast with you, and somebody asked me, they said, have you ever thought about doing a TPA podcast and having all the people that are, you know, that are friends of yours in the industry and everything on it? It could be really good. I said, well, it could be really good, except I just don't have the bandwidth. So, no, we have entertained that a few times over the past several years. And we just, you know what? I have a better time. Look, if I could just show up and have a drink and be a guest on your podcast or someone else's podcast or this or that, I'm happy doing that. I'm really, really happy doing that because I don't have to do any of the heavy lifting. So I leave it to you guys to edit everything together and make it all beautiful and fun. And I'll show up on a podcast when I'm wanted. I like that the best. I think if I had to, on top of everything else, plan podcasts and do all the editing and learn how to use the software and all that, it would just be one more big thing on the heap pile that never gets done, right?
Right, sure.
So, Jesus, we still have haunt stuff that we don't have online yet. So that's going to go into the spring, getting all of our haunt stuff online. But no, so we thought about it, and the answer is no. We are just fine being guests of yours and everybody else.
Right on. No, I can understand that because, I – host and produce this show, but whenever I get to be on another show, that's like it's like I'm on vacation. I mean, I just gotta show up and talk. That's all I gotta do.
You bet.
I was like, call me anytime.
But, absolutely.
No, I got you. So so let's circle a little bit back to Indy about some of the coverage that you were covering, for lack of a better phrase.
The coverage that we were covering of Indiana Jones.
So so that was – it was built in 94. I'm sure it started in 93 because these things take a while to get going.
So they tore up Adventureland. Adventureland was closed for so long. And, basically Adventureland was just one big green work wall.
Really?
For a long time.
And even Jungle Cruise was down, huh?
Oh, everything, because they had to reroute Jungle Cruise, for Indy. And everything was affected. And so the entrance to Adventureland and then over by Pirates, they had the big green work walls up. And you just, for a long time, couldn't go into Adventureland because not only did they do Indy, I mean, they redid all the Adventureland shops. Adventureland used to be just green slurry coat that you would walk on. And so with the arrival of Indiana Jones, they made the ground look like dried, mud with tracks and stuff through it. The entire land was redone.
I don't remember Indiana that. Jones. Wow.
And at the time, it was the largest show building that Disney had ever built for an attraction at Disneyland. And so that was a big deal too. Building that, they had to reroute the monorail around it, because the monorail followed the berm. Mm-hmm. Well, Indy was built outside the berm in the parking lot, in the Eeyore section of the parking lot, And so they had to create an S-curve that went around Indiana Jones. So we would go out to the parking lot, and Bob Barber actually has an amazing collection. He went out there like several times a week for the entire process and took pictures of the show building being built. And for a long time, you could see the guts and the track and everything inside because they didn't put the walls on, you know, for a long time of the show building. So we were there to cover the entire thing. And it was pretty amazing. And it was very exciting because it was coming for the 40th anniversary. And it was, what, 40 years of adventure was the slogan, right? And it was all about Indy, man. And we were very fortunate to be there at a time where we could just see this kind of all coming together. And, you know, it's one of those things where you got to think about it. We saw it being built for several years, and Indy was long. I mean, the evolution of Indiana Jones at Disneyland was a 10-year project.
10 years,
this team for 10 years plus on Indiana Jones before it finally came to fruition and opened. And, you know, these guys, it was their life. You know, it was their life for over a decade, this team. And so seeing it all come together, what a cool time, you know, to be a fan. What an interesting time to be a fanzine for this kind of thing. And yeah, it was crazy. It was something that I'll never forget, you know, being at the celebrity party, seeing all the celebrities come walking in on the red carpet. They brought them down on vehicles down Main Street, and then they dumped them off in the hub at a red carpet. Then the red carpet went into Adventureland, and it was just a who's who. It was everybody from Arnold Schwarzenegger and Carrie Fisher to George Lucas. Then, of course, Tony Baxter was there, and Marty Sklar, and people from Imagineering. And it was just a who's who, and it was just crazy, man.
Now, there's a building that you see now, and for people that go to Disneyland are familiar, when you get off of the parking tram, there's a show building that looks like it has some painted green shrubbery on it or something. Is that Indy?
That is Indy.
That's what I thought.
That's Indy, and when you're at Downtown Disney, you can actually hear the subwoofers from the boulder at the end of Indy. Spoiler alert. There's a boulder at the end of Indy.
Yeah, this is obviously, I know a lot of our listeners haven't been to Disneyland. They're East Coasters. And so there's just going to be spoilers for the ride if you haven't experienced it. So,
dude, it opened in 95. We're okay.
Yeah.
I think they know.
So, I'm sensitive to that stuff still because I try to avoid spoilers. I avoided Forbidden Journey spoilers for 3 years, and that was really hard.
I can imagine, man. I can totally imagine, especially in today's day and age.
Yeah.
You know, we're the same way too, though. Like we knew that we were going to, because we go every year to IAPA in Orlando, and so we knew that we were going to see King Kong for the first time this last year. And so when Kong started really ramping up and they started doing like the vehicle tests and all that stuff, Johanna and I, we just stopped watching. We didn't look at any pictures. We didn't look at any video. So finally, when we got there in November, we kind of knew what Kong was because, I mean, you can't be blind to everything.
Yeah.
But you know what? We hadn't watched any videos. We hadn't looked at a lot of pictures. So it was all really new to us, and it was really great. And we do that with really any big attraction that's coming online these days.
Yeah.
Which is hard because we work in the industry. And chances are we have friends that are working on these attractions. So it's even doubly hard, you know, for us.
Sure.
But we do. And it absolutely, man. But, yeah, there's a boulder in Indiana Jones.
Right.
And you can hear that. You can hear the bass. You can hear the subwoofer from that from Downtown Disney. If you're walking through Downtown Disney, you could hear the rumbling of the Indiana Jones show building, which is meters and meters away.
Interesting. Yeah. No, I forever I was trying to figure out what that building was. And just now when you were talking, it just clicked in my head. I was like, that's the Indy show building.
It is Indy. And it not, you know, it didn't always have that jungle motif on it. For a long time, it was just a big green show building. All the show buildings at Disneyland are painted green, a very specific green. It's like an avocado green. That way, the fire department and other services know that those are attractions. So they're all color-coded. And for a long time, it was just a big green box that sat out there in the parking lot. It wasn't until a little bit later on that they covered it with I don't know whether it's painted on the building or it's a scrim that goes over the building, or some sort of canvas that goes over the building.
Something like that. Yeah.
but back in the day when it first opened, nope, it was just a big green building, and it sat out in the section of the parking lot that used to be Eeyore. And actually, if you are in the queue, and I don't know, I haven't done this for a long time, but if you're in the queue, they kind of stop you in the pre-show room where you see the video of Sala talking and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a cast member there, they will use their flashlight, and back in that alcove where the quote unquote movie projector is showing the film,
yeah,
the old Eeyore parking lot sign is up there. And you can't see it unless the cast member shines a light on it, and you have to kind of look for it. But it's way in the back. It's the honest to God, it's the old Eeyore parking lot sign, and it's up there in the Indiana Jones building.
Wow, see, I've heard that before, but I've never seen it. Now I know why.
Yeah, they have to use a flashlight, and it's got to be pretty strong because it's fairly buried in all the gack that's up there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a flashlight that's strong enough and the cast member knows where to look, you can see it. You can see it bigger than day.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So it's kind of unprecedented attraction for anywhere, let alone for Disneyland in 95, 94. How did you interpret it? Like, how do you remember interpreting it? Like, and also before you answer that, for me, I lived in Southern California until 94. And then I didn't come back to visit until like the summer of 95.
Sure.
So I feel like that whole period you're talking about where Adventureland was closed off, like I completely missed it. And so it's very fascinating for me to hear this because I when I go to Adventureland now, I just kind of assume that's just the way it's always been. And it's actually kind of mind-blowing to me that it's not.
No, Adventureland completely was redone. I mean, Adventureland was, Adventureland was there have been four complete renovations of lands, right, at Disneyland. The first was Fantasyland,
right,
in the early 80s, right?
Yep, we know that one.
Then next up, it was the conversion of Bear Country to Critter Country for Splash Mountain. Mm. And I was there for that because I worked at Disneyland in the late 80s when they were building Splash. And that's actually when I met Tony Baxter, and which that paved the way for me being able to talk to him and have access to him when they were building Indy. Then in the 90s, and then, of course, then in the late 90s, in 98, I believe it was, we saw the complete renovation of Tomorrowland. So we've seen a lot of change at Disneyland. But going back to your question about Indy and Adventureland, so it was kind of, it was all new. It was new territory, and we knew that it was going to be a temple. They made it clear that it was going to be a temple that was not happy that you were there, and you were going to be in these ride vehicles, and these ride vehicles would go on different routes through the building, and each Jeep, we knew it was going to be a Jeep that you were on, each Jeep transport was going to have its own personality. Mm-hmm. And they were being programmed at the time by a gentleman named Dave Durham, and Dave's a really nice guy. We've talked to him several times, and he was the programmer on Indy. And the thing that is kind of frustrating, there were a lot of things that were these fine, beautiful details on Indy that never were realized. They never got to be finished because the park wanted to open it. The park was eager to open Indiana Jones, and Imagineering kept saying, no, we're almost there. We got to tweak this and tweak that. And Disneyland kind of said, no, this it's good enough. It's good enough. We're going to open it. This is it. And so there are a lot of things, including the vehicles having their own personalities, that never really got completed and never completed their journey from concept to installation. There are several parts inside Indiana Jones that never were realized the way that they were supposed to be. If you've ever gone through that opening scene, it's the Gates of Doom is what it's called, where you see Indy holding the gate, you know, the gate closed. If you go up through that section, it's kind of weird because all the scenic comes down about halfway through the room, and then it just drops off, and it's all black curtain all the way down to the ground.
Yeah.
And it's just really strange, right? Well, in the concept for that, that whole room was supposed to be filled with fog, and you were supposed to be floating from this quote-unquote like tractor beam type thing that was coming from the Gate of Doom. And so when Indy says, you know, swerve left or swerve right or, you know, whatever he says,
yeah.
And the vehicle, it feels like it drops a little bit. That was supposed to be you breaking free of this, you know, tractor beam type thing.
Oh, wow.
And the whole room was going to be filled with mist. And that's why the scenic only goes down to a certain point, because from you know, where it's all black curtain all the way down was all supposed to be filled with fog. You weren't supposed to see any of it.
Ah, right. That makes sense.
You weren't supposed to see the track, and the next time you ride it, kind of imagine that in your mind's eye. It actually, the way the vehicle's moving, it does feel like you're floating towards this gate, and that's why he says swerve, you know, to get out of it, and then your car swerves and drops. You can feel the car drop out of this tractor beam. You know, that was never realized because of HVAC issues. Another victim of an HVAC and HVAC is, you know, the air circulation through the building. The rat room, right? You have the rat mist screen that I don't even know if it ever works now at all. But back in the day, there was a door that used to close between that scene and the dark corridor. And the mist was perfect, and it created this amazing screen. And I swear to God, it looked like you were running into this branch full of rats.
Really?
And that's why when you go through that now, you can actually hear the rats landing inside the car. There's like all these little thuds. Right? So the fire marshal came in and said, no, that door needs to stay open. Well, that created a vacuum of air when the vehicles were going through. It really screwed up that mist curtain. And so WDI, you know, they created a workaround to fix that. But Disneyland said, no, this is good enough.
Wow, because so, that looks really poor. It's like you go through this like amazing, incredible scenery, you know, and then you turn in a corner.
It's all black, right?
Yeah, and then it looked like someone's like home projector. This is like going on.
Yeah, so that's never worked the way that it's supposed to. And, you know, over the years, they've talked about different replacement scenes for that. And I wish they would. I wish they would just do a big practical replacement scene for that, because the way that the HVAC flows through there, that curtain, that mist curtain will never work. It never worked the way it was supposed to. And certainly back in the day before the fire marshal made them keep that door open, I can remember riding it and it worked perfectly and it looked beautiful. So it did work when it was allowed to work the way it was designed. Unfortunately, you know, it didn't happen. They had to keep that door open, and as a result, that miss screen doesn't work. So lots of cool things over the evolution of Indy. You've heard of the falling rocks, right? The giant ice machine.
No, that, let's talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah, so as you pass the Gates of Doom, you know, you went down this, you know, quote unquote stairs where you feel a vehicle go, you know, down the stairs, and you see it's the Chamber of Bubbling Death. If you see that for the first time, Mara used to shoot, you know, lasers out of its eyes, and big fire explosions would go off right, you know, right next to the vehicle. Now there is a giant door, and it's easiest to see when you're on the bridge. If you're on the bridge, if you look up towards the right at about 1 or 2 o'clock, you can see this weird, it's like this weird hexagon or octagon type shape in the ceiling. Those are two doors that used to open up, and a giant ice machine up there would drop big chunks of ice that were dyed with Lipton tea.
Wow.
They would drop them past the ride vehicles there, and it looked like big chunks of rock falling, free falling past the ride vehicles. And then they would go down, they would land in the quote unquote lava down below. They would melt and they would be recycled, and the water would suck right back up into the roof where the giant ice machine was waiting again. And that only lasted for like 2 or 3 months, if that.
Okay.
That
yeah.
was discontinued.
Yeah, I never saw that because I was like, that sounds crazy.
So there are a lot of things. I mean, when Indiana Jones opened, man, when it opened, it was just so damn good. There were so many really just mind-blowing effects and amazing practical elements that just unfortunately didn't make it. They don't exist today. So Indy's kind of a weird, bitter thing for me. Like when I ride it, which is not very often, when I do ride it, I get really angry because I can remember how beautiful it was when it opened. And there are things that just don't work that should work, and the park just hasn't, you know, maintained it. And it's kind of a bitter subject for me because I was there. I watched it being built. You know, we rode the thing. We rode it with Tony when it opened, and God, it was so damn good, man. And they're just so – it's like having a Ferrari that you never take in for an oil change. That's kind of what's happened with Indy over the years, you know? And that's a real shame because Indy is a gem. And not only is it a gem, it's the last e-ticket attraction that Disneyland, you know, has had in how many years now? You know,
it's 21 years now, right?
It's crazy. Or 22, that's the last e-ticket attraction for Disneyland, right?
Yeah, I never thought about that until you just said that.
Yeah, which is crazy. That's insane. But that's what it is, you know?
Wow. There's a few other things that are missing, too.
If they're going to go through with Indiana Jones 5, maybe with Disney now, you know, owning all the rights to everything Indy, you know, maybe they'll spruce it up a little bit for part 5 when it comes out, because there's going to be a renewed, you know, interest in the Indiana Jones attraction. You know, maybe they'll work some of the new film into it. Who knows what they're going to do, right?
Right.
I do know that over the years they've done things they didn't need to do, like they'd done the registered projection mapping, you know, on Mara and on, you know. So the Chamber of Destiny was the first room that you went into, and it looked like your vehicle was taking a different door every time that you would go in, right?
Yeah.
Well, that was a beautiful, huge practical effect. And you could hear as you went in, you could hear the wall behind you shifting. The entire wall shifted to make it look like you were going into a different doorway. And Disneyland just didn't want to maintain that anymore. So that's permanently been locked off. Mm-hmm. And they went to registered projection to make it look like, you know, magic was happening before you go into one of these rooms, which is just really, really disappointing because it was an amazing practical effect that worked. And yeah, it worked well, man.
Yeah, no, I really thought that we were taking different routes every time. It wasn't until I got older and became a theme park nerd that I was like, oh, wow, it was the same place.
And then, you know, somebody – here's the problem. Every generation of Imagineer, any – and not just Disney. It's every park, everywhere. Every new generation of designers, they want to put their own stink on it, right? So not only did that, they do that, they spent money and they did this projection mapping on Mara. And they changed Mara's voice. If you'll remember, they changed Mara's voice and everybody was like, what the hell is that? Because it was a horrible sounding voice. Then they re-recorded it. So now we're on the third iteration now of Mara's voice. And there was no reason to change Mara's voice, you know, in the first place.
Yeah.
Probably just a friend saying, hey, I can do this because I can do this. You want to be the voice, you know, type of thing. And so, dude, all these things have been tweaked and messed with in Indy. When there are other things like the Rat Room, that really needs some TLC. Don't worry about the projection mapping. Fix the damn Rat Room, you know. In there. Priorities, folks. Dude, I'm like the bitter old man when I ride Indiana Jones because I have such a personal history with it, with TPA covering it and being there to watch it being built and open, to the way it is now. And God, I got to say, it was better when it opened, you know?
Well, understandably, but the interesting thing about it is that it's still like one of the better attractions. It's still like.
Sure. I mean, it was.
Still something to it, right?
It was groundbreaking. I mean, and you have this, you know, you have this discussion. If you're a super nerd, you have this discussion whereas it's a blue moon, right? It's a blue moon when a brand new idea comes along for an attraction. Because really, I mean, all the really famous attractions, they have genesis that can be traced back to Coney Island here in America, and then further sometimes back to Europe, to the beer gardens and that type of thing. Whereas, you know, you get new systems once in a while. You know, I'm rambling, but what I'm talking about is like you have something like Big Thunder Mountain, right? Or Expedition Everest, or Grizzly in Hong Kong. These are all modern version of scenic railways,
right?
Which go back to Coney Island, right? The Matterhorn, it's a scenic railway, right? Grizzly Gulch at Hong Kong, that's a scenic railway. It's just newer technology, but it's the same thing. Indiana Jones was new, right? The motion vehicle, motion based on the vehicle,
yeah,
moving through a practical space, that was new. So it was groundbreaking. Now it wasn't so groundbreaking when they did a cookie cutter of that and made Dinosaur, for Florida, and that was Countdown to Extinction when it opened. And I'll tell you, that was the first time it was – talk about really jarring, bad show. They had a test vehicle for Countdown to Extinction running through Indy and during operating hours. So you would be standing there in line for Indy, and suddenly this big-ass white time travel vehicle type thing would come into the station.
Really?
Oh, yeah, dude. Hello, good show? What? And it was so weird because one of these things is not like the other one. And it was really strange seeing that. So now if you go on Dinosaur, it's Dinosaur now. It was Countdown to Extinction. It is literally – it's the same ride layout. It's the same ride vehicles. It was the first time that Disney ever took a major attraction like that and really cookie-cuttered it, you know, and put it into the Florida park.
But you know what's absent is the seeing that you don't have that big open room where like, wow, imagine if that was filled with dinosaurs, like that would be awesome, yeah. But just all black. It's nothing.
So now what with Dinosaur, it's what you've got to go back before the meteor hits and you got to bring this dinosaur back or something.
Yeah.
That, right?
It took me a few times to figure that out, but yeah.
The original one, Countdown to Extinction, so the original one was interesting because and it was really apparently Michael Eisner had a lot of say in this. It was, you know, you were there, obviously, Countdown to Extinction, not a happy ending.
No.
You're there to see the final moments of dinosaurs. And so you're back there in this time machine to witness this. And the way that Michael wanted it was everything is dark because, of course, dinosaurs – the world back then wouldn't have show lighting, and everything was to be lit up by these meteors landing and having these impact explosions.
Huh.
So you were traveling through the dark and a meteor would, you know, land next to you, and as it would explode and light up when it hit, you would see the dinosaur and all the scenic around it.
Oh, wow. That sounds pretty scary.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was fairly intense. It was certainly a lot scarier than it is now as Dinosaur. But even then, I don't know that it really worked that well. Because, again, it was freaking dark then, right? And, like, the whole thing with Indy is you're going through Indy, and you can see how grandiose everything is and how big every scene is. And with Countdown to Extinction, it was all dark unless, you know, something was lighting up for a moment. But still, those of us that were from the West Coast – that had an Indiana Jones, we could go, and in your mind's eye, you're like, okay, well, I'm in the mummy room now. Well, now I'm in the bug room.
Right.
And this is where we would drop under the boulder, except now it's a big dinosaur coming out. You know, so it was just kind of a weird time when they first figured, oh, we could save a lot of money just by making a cookie cutter of this.
Right, that was
slapping another theme on it.
What year did Countdown Extinction open? Was it 99, or was it with the park?
It was, yeah, I want to say, it, and I don't know my Animal Kingdom history that well. It was pretty early on, though. Mm. It was pretty early on, and I remember we were entitled pass holders at that time going, wait a minute, that's our ride. You know, how dare you make this a dinosaur ride and put it over there? Why don't you change it, you know?
Right.
So, of course, we went through all that. To this day, not my favorite ride by a long shot there. And it's just kind of a weird moment in history where they said, you know what, we can just make a copy of this and put another theme on it. So it is kind of interesting in that regard, but I certainly remember when they were testing the vehicles here, dude, it was so weird. You'd be in Indiana Jones station and all of a sudden a time vehicle would come in. That was really strange.
I mean, especially since how themed the Indy cars are. Like, it's not like no one's going to notice that it's...
Oh, no, and it was really weird. This here comes this white time travel vehicle, and it got blinking lights on it and stuff. We were like, what in the hell is that?
Did you know what it was when you saw
it? Yeah, we did. At the time that Indy came online like that, there was... You know, there were BBS. I think there were BBS systems back then. I forget exactly what. Certainly not Twitter or anything like that. But I mean, yeah, we knew that it was for Countdown to Extinction.
But the average person would probably be like,
"No, the average person."
Okay.
I mean, still today, I mean, you could put a Countdown vehicle in there now, and people would be like, "I don't know what the difference." People don't know.
Yeah.
General public doesn't know, but the fans certainly know what's up. They know what's going on. In fact, today, and I think that we've been there for that too. We've seen the evolution of fans. Fans have become very sophisticated. Fans have a very sophisticated palate, and they, you know, certainly in some ways fans have become very entitled. but in another, you know what? The fans really are the ones keeping these parks straight and honest, right? Because the fans constantly push for bigger and better, and they call them when they rest on their laurels, right? Walt Disney said, "We will never rest on our laurels." So the Disneyland fans, it's kind of a love-hate relationship, I think, because Disneyland fans are very vocal, and the minute they see something that they don't think is right, boy, they're suddenly very vocal about it.
Do you think that management takes the fan outcry into account?
So I would say – I was just about to say, now they don't always, and I would say more times than not they don't pay attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been times in the past where the public outcry has then reached, you know, mainstream media. I mean, there was a time when they were thinking about taking Lincoln out of Main Street, and there were a lot of people, myself included, that got very vocal about keeping Walt's tribute to Abraham Lincoln, his hero, his inspiration, on Main Street, and they were going to replace it with Muppets. At one time on Main Street.
What, Muppet Vision or something else?
No, just something with Muppets, mm-hmm. Right? And we were very vocal about that. We said, no, it needs to be Lincoln. There's no reason to get rid of the World's Fair attraction that meant so much to Walt Disney on Main Street, which Main Street and Fantasyland were the two parts of the park that were really Walt Disney, you mm-hmm. know? And it became a big public battle. You know, and the newspapers picked it up and all that. So I think Disney kind of backed off of, you know, with that plan. But I would say more often than not, no, they don't, especially now. I mean, everybody belly aches about everything these days.
Yeah, everyone's crying wolf, huh?
Well, sometimes it's legit, sometimes it's not. And no, the company kind of does what they're going to do these days, right?
Yeah.
It's way too big of a thing now. But, you know, once in a while, they, I'm sure, take note. They certainly didn't take notice when everybody was up in arms about Tower of Terror becoming, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, which I personally am not a fan of that idea. I'm not a fan of taking out an attraction that's Tower was 12 years old here. It was in its prime. And to save a few bucks and to change it and to slap an overlay on it for Marvel. You know, I think it was ultimately very short-sighted, you know, because by the time that they build Marvel around the Guardians of the Galaxy attraction, you know, that Guardians attraction, that'll be 3 or 5 years old. It won't even be a new attraction then for the land to be an anchor for the new land. So it's very problematic. You know? But they do what they're going to do. And you know, it's kind of a weird evolution because everybody has a voice now. If you got a Twitter, you've got a voice, right? If you got a Snapchat, if you've got an Instagram, you've got a voice. And certainly Disney has more than its share of annual pass holders, way, way too many annual pass holders.
Well, Disneyland, particularly.
Oh, man, they've created a monster. And, you know, the Disney fans, they call them out on things that they don't like. And rightfully so. I mean, if you're paying $1,000 for a pass, you know, you expect a certain quality of things. And I think that sometimes Disney, you know, nails it. And I think a lot of the time, Disney's kind of asleep at the wheel. You know, then the attitude is kind of like, well, you're going to take this and like it. And the fans, you know, I think rightfully so, to a certain degree, you know, they're not cool with that. So that's why all eyes are on things like Star Wars. You know, Star Wars is, I would say that Star Wars, even more so than like New Tomorrowland in 98, you know, New Tomorrowland when 98 came in, that was that was a big deal after Indiana Jones in 95. But it wasn't as big as it was supposed to be. I mean, they had major sponsors pull out. They lost millions of dollars in sponsorship revenue. So things like rocket rods, that got really dumbed down from what it was supposed to be. And ultimately, I don't think that New Tomorrowland really worked, you know. Certainly not enough to trade away our Skyway and our People Mover and all that and move the rocket jets. I think that Tomorrowland took a big step backwards, right? And we were there for that. We were there for the opening of New Tomorrowland. And, you know, I think Star Wars, the new land that they're building right now, is the closest thing we have to, you know, the scope of what Indiana Jones meant to Disneyland, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And, of course, all eyes are on it. And it just – it's with that whole mandate of, man – this better not suck, you know, especially with Universal breathing down your neck with the success of Harry Potter. And I'm sure, you know, next will come Nintendo and, you know, Universal Creative. They're unstoppable at this point. And so you bet all eyes are on Disney here on the West Coast saying, God, Star Wars, you know, cannot suck. And on the East Coast, you're saying, you know, Pandora cannot suck. It's going to be really interesting to see in the next coming years how these areas open and how they're received by the fans. I think it's going to be great. I think Star Wars will be great here. I don't know that it necessarily is the right park here at Disneyland for an entire land based on Star Wars. I think it might unbalance things a little bit. But, God, that's a whole other conversation.
Let's dip our toe in that pool there. I mean, where do you think it should go?
I think it's the most significant thing, though, since Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think it should be a third gate?
I think it should have probably been a third gate probably in Florida. I mean, I've talked about this before. Mm. They got so much room in Florida, they don't know what to do with. They'll never fill it up. You know, they got 43 square miles or whatever it is. And could you imagine if they had just – put the entire budget of what it's going to cost to put it here and there, if they had just focused that on a third gate and, you know, it would be the universe of Star Wars, and you go in and like every land is a different planet, that could have been like really gnarly. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure it'll be great here. We've got friends that are working on the project here, and I'm sure that it's going to be fantastic. It's going to be super detailed. I'm sure the attractions will be fine. I'm thinking we're going to get a cantina, which Disney hardcore Disneylanders are going to have to get over the fact. I think they're going to have alcohol.
I was like, you think they are? I don't know.
I think they are. and I think folks are going to have to get over that. You know, I think it's going to be good. And I think Pandora is going to be good in Florida. As well, it should be. You know, Indiana Jones is what, 20 years old or whatever. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't take two decades to better that, you know. And I don't think that anything that they've built at Disneyland has bettered Indiana Jones, you know.
What about Cars, Racers?
You know, Racers is great, but I think that if you put it next to Indiana Jones, I think Indy wins. I think Indiana Jones was so innovative and so beautiful the way that it was built. I think that it really is still all about Indy. If you're going to put the big e-tickets,
right,
the modern e-tickets. Now, I don't think that Indiana Jones holds a candle to the Haunted Mansion or to Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, because you're talking about attractions that have withstood – Pirates has withstood the test of time for 50 years. Think about that for a second. 50 years, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Wow.
That's been at Disneyland. and look at the sheer scope of it and the magnitude and the impact that it's had on pop culture. It has spawned a multi-billion-dollar movie industry, movie franchise. Something like Pirates. It's so big and so beautiful. We as an industry don't even know how to make attractions like that anymore. You know, first of all, you couldn't. You sit down and say, we're going to make a 20-minute boat ride through Pirates. I mean, that would be today. That would be a $500-600 million attraction.
Wow.
So you couldn't even do something like that. You know, today nobody's going to pay for that. You know, you're lucky if you get an attraction now that's more than 4 minutes, and Pirates is 20 minutes. You know, so those Mansion and Pirates, man, they stand on their own. And I know I don't got to preach to you about Haunted Mansion being amazing.
Right. So, we'll save the Haunted Mansion talk for the documentary.
I think that Indy has really kind of held its own also, even though it's not as good as it was when it opened. It absolutely has held its own. And I think it's the greatest thing that we've had at Disneyland in the past several decades. And so we will see, right, how Star Wars stacks up to that. We're going to find out, aren't we?
Sure. I mean, I'm sure. I think Star Wars will be awesome. I'm not sure there's going to be whatever attractions they're talking about putting in there are going to have a place in my my top attractions of all time. I could be wrong, and it's great to prove me wrong.
Right.
But, I mean, I put Indy as my number four, like, favorite attraction, right, like, ever. And just to the top three, it's, you know, Mansion, Pirates, and Forbidden Journey. So,
yeah,
I can't even imagine anything in Star Wars, even just thematically, that would affect me being the creepy Disney guy in that way. But, that's the thing. I guess where we're at now in the theme park landscape is we want to walk into places we've seen in the movies. We want to turn around 360 degrees and be like, all right, we're here. And I think, you know, Star Wars is going to deliver that.
That's a funny thing that always catches me as strange, because, like, especially with, you know, we work in the entertainment industry right now, mm-hmm. you know, and everything that I write as a show writer, oh my God, dude, if I don't say the word immersive like three times in every paragraph, immersive, I'm going to say, I pound this drum so much. Immersive is nothing new. Immersive is like bacon, dude. In the past few years, everything has got to be immersive. Well, guess what? That has been around forever, just like bacon has been around forever, and suddenly everybody loves bacon. Guess what? Walt Disney, when he created Disneyland, those attractions, guess what? That was immersive. It's nothing new. When he built New Orleans Square and you're walking around in New Orleans Square and you're in an attraction like Pirates of the Caribbean or Haunted Mansion, guess what? That's an immersive attraction, man. It doesn't get more immersive.
No, 100%. I mean, that's the standard.
Things that are like, it's all new, it's cutting edge, immersive. No, there's nothing cutting edge about it. Walt and his boys, they knew what immersive was. They had that down decades ago, 50 years ago. Disneyland was immersive. So that is one of my – oh, my God. That's one of my buttons, man, that just sends me that sends me on a tangent like you wouldn't believe.
I didn't mean to get you riled up there.
Anything that we create – and it goes – whether it's Disneyland or it's somebody down the street building a home haunt. Dude, if it is not an immersive environment, you're not doing it right.
Well, sure.
Any attraction that you design is immersive. Any haunted house that you walk through is immersive. It's all around you. It's tangible. So it's just so weird that's become like the hot word right over the past few years. No, it's been going on since 1955 at least. Probably before that. There were attractions at Coney Island in the late 1800s that were immersive. So it's nothing new to this industry. It's just the sexy new marketing word.
Well, it's definitely a marketing word. I don't mean just attractions, though. I mean, I feel like I think it's the standard of immersiveness. Like, clearly, Walt's day was pretty high. Then it seemed to kind of, like, the standard started to go down quite a bit.
And
now what I will say, and so where this is going, and oh my God, writers, I hope you read, you know, follow, I hope that listeners are having their seatbelts on, because boy, this has been a wild ride. It's gone off the rails all over the place. But someone's gonna find this appealing, I think. Either that or you're never gonna have me back on, because we have the lowest ratings ever. So you know, the thing that yes, I will say that you have something come online like Hogsmeade or Diagon, even more so Diagon Alley. Mm-hmm. That I would say is the difference between VHS and Blu-ray, right?
Yeah.
I would say that environment is so HD. So like when we're you know, one of the things we say when we're designing things is it's a high definition environment.
Oh, right? Okay.
It can be shot with an HD camera, and you will see details that you've never seen before. You shoot it with a 4K camera, and you see details that you'd never see before. Whereas back in the day, things obviously, New Orleans Square, even though it's beautiful at Disneyland, it's nowhere near as dense as something like Diagon Alley as far as detailing goes. Mm-hmm. So that, sure, I think that immersion has been taken to a whole nother level with Diagon Alley and with Hogsmeade. I mean, those are arguably two of the most amazing theme park areas ever designed by any company. I would say that also right up there with that, and probably, you know, much better than that I've seen. Now, I've not been to Tokyo Disneyland, and of course Tokyo Disneyland is supposed to be the creme de la creme, mm-hmm. Of that type of environment. But you know what? Animal Kingdom is by far the most immersive and the most high definition design that I've ever seen, because it's the entire park. You know, Joe Rohde and his team, talk about visionary. Joe Rohde took that whole game to a whole nother level. And anywhere you go at Animal Kingdom, oh my God, everything is so beautiful there. And it doesn't matter whether it's just, you know, the entry plaza to some of the safari trails that you go on to, you know, the new restaurant Tiffin's. I mean, everything is so damn HD there and so just incredibly detailed. That's really staggering. So I can only imagine with him at the helm of Avatar, I have a feeling that when we finally get to walk into Pandora this year, that it's going to just take our breath away. I think Pandora, even though nobody really cares about the film franchise anymore at this point.
Yeah, it's been so long.
The land itself, when you walk in, is just going to be one big ass whooping. I think you walk in and it's just going to be like, holy crap. You're not even going to know what to think, because it's going to be so beautiful. That's what I'm thinking, especially after dark. I'm hearing there's a lot of bioluminescent stuff that they've worked on that's proprietary, that's never been done before. And boy, if you walk into Pandora and those, you know, plants are glowing and everything, dude, that's going to be mind-blowing.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's what I think about that too. I mean, I like the movie okay, but you know, no one really has an attachment to it. But when I think back of the movie, one of the things that comes to mind is the glowing plants and all that stuff.
Sure.
So that was kind of like, that's like a must. Like, if that's not in you know in Avatar Land, or then that's a major fail.
I think Pandora. I think the one thing that Pandora is going to have going for it, because we know that they have the two attractions. You know, you have the flying simulator type thing where you're on the dragon type thing, and then you also have the flume ride that they've talked about. But I think just the land itself, man, walking through the land, it's going to be, I bet, just gnarly. And I can't wait for that. I think I'm really excited as a fan, you know, going back to the fan first, you know, as a fan, I'm excited to see that. And then I'm very curious as a designer, you know, to see that, to see what they pulled off, because certainly that determines where, you know, other things go in the industry for other competing companies. And there's all these watermarks that you look at. Certainly when Indiana Jones came out. You know, we're going back to Indy. When Indiana Jones came out, you know, there were attractions that sprung up that were much like Indiana Jones, right? And I'll tell you, the mandate went out. The mandate, even inside of Disney, went out. You know, we got to do better than Indiana Jones. This has got to be bigger and better than Indiana Jones. And you know, back in the day, it was, we got to do this bigger and better than Pirates. And so they set their own watermarks. You know, so it's interesting to see how these new attractions really kind of, you know, spawn the next generation of you know, aspiration. And it's interesting. I think that sometimes they fall short. I don't know that there's anything that's come online that's really that comparable to Indiana Jones, even all these years later. Like I said, it's a blue moon when something really new and groundbreaking, you know, comes online. But I'm certainly glad that we as fans get a front row seat, whether it's Universal or Disney or whoever making these attractions. God, what a great time to be an attraction fan, huh?
Oh, yeah. No, especially since Universal Creative did, you know, The Wizarding World. It to have, you know, no one's less resting on their laurels anymore. It's what it seems like, at least.
No. I mean, it's the theme park war, right? Yeah. I mean, it's the theme park war, and guess what? We win. Yeah. We're the fans. We have the passes for all the parks. We win,
right?
Because we get to enjoy, you know, the fruits of everybody's labor. And so I think it's great. I love that Universal and Disney are going back and forth at each other because they're pushing each other, right? Mm-hmm. They're pushing each other to do bigger and better things with every project that they undertake. And so I'm really excited to see what the next few years have to come for Disney and for Universal, you know, and for other parks too, you know. Magic Mountain here in Los Angeles, we're about to get the first dark ride ever at Magic Mountain, which is crazy.
Really?
To think that park has never had a dark ride before, and, you know, we're going to get Justice League, which, you know.
Really? I've never heard of this before.
It's not on the same level as an Indiana Jones or Forbidden Journey, but you know what? It's a dark ride. It's not a roller coaster, and it's got oceaneering vehicles, and it's got theme, and so it's great because, you know, you see all these parks really upping their game, and it's, like I said, it's just a really exciting, groovy time to be a fan here in Southern California and elsewhere in the United States, with this new revolution of great and innovative theme park attractions coming online.
That's crazy. I never heard about the thing coming to Magic Mountain.
That's going to open up this summer.
Wow, I missed that one. But I know that that's a Six Flags park for people not in the area.
Yeah.
And, you know, I live in New Jersey for most of my life. And, you know, the Six Flags Great Adventure there, and they did open up a dark ride, which was pretty poor for the Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm.
So that I assume when did that open? It was at least 10 years ago, probably. I don't know, but I assume that that Magic Mountain, being in proximity to Disneyland and Universal Hollywood, knows that they need to, you know, be on a comparable level with the.
They
with
do, the and I, yeah, you know, they know that their budgets. I mean, they're not going to spend, you know. In 95, Indiana Jones cost well over $100 million. And obviously, no one's going to spend that. You know, Forbidden Journey, obviously very expensive. Mm-hmm. Multi hundreds of millions of dollars to bring Potter to Universal here. Obviously, Six Flags doesn't have that kind of budget. You know, it's a big deal when they spend $20 million on a roller coaster.
Right.
You know? And you know, Disney with Cars Land is spending, you know, several hundred million dollars on rock work alone for, you know, Cars Land. So it's a whole different playing field.
Right. Yeah.
So, but with Justice League, you know, they're upping their game. There are Justice Leagues that have opened at other Six Flags parks. Ours is going to be different in that it features Harley Quinn, which is going to be new to the Justice League attraction. And so they do know that they have to kind of up their game a little bit in this market. The Southern California market is just as brutal as the Orlando market, you know. So they've got to up their game, and I think it's going to be great. I think that's going to be great for Magic Mountain because, you know, people that go there, they, you know, we, again, it goes back to be fans being sophisticated. We know that we're not getting a Forbidden Journey attraction. We know that we're not getting Indiana Jones. when you go to Magic Mountain, you're going on kick-ass roller coasters, and hey, guess what? They've got a really cool little dark ride now.
Right, right.
So that's all it needs to be, you know. And it's fun, and I think that the fans here will understand that, and they're going to go. They're going to have a great time. I mean, who doesn't like that IP? You know, everybody wants to see the Justice League stuff. And no, I think it's going to be a great addition to Magic Mountain, especially when it's a freaking 120 degrees there and you get to go into a dark ride. That'll be the best place in the park because it's going to be all air conditioned, right?
Right.
So the line's going to be 4 hours long to get in there just because it's got AC. That's what's going to happen. But, you know, no, it's a great time. Southern California, it's a great time to be a theme park fan. And, you know, kind of tying this all together, mm-hmm. what an amazing journey it's been from 1994 to 2017 as Theme Park Adventure. We've seen so many things come and go. We've seen so many amazing attractions come online. And, you know, we've made so many friends along the way. This journey has been so incredible and just so much more than we ever thought it would be. We can't even comprehend it. We don't even try to think of like where it will end up. We don't know.
No, you couldn't.
We don't know. We don't know when we're going to, you know, who knows when we're going to ever hang up our, you know, hats. We don't know that we are, you know, we're coming up on year 23 this summer. You know, you always wonder, well, maybe on the 25th anniversary, that's a good time to call it quits. And then you think, well, we're doing really good. Maybe the 30th anniversary. Who knows how long TPA is going to go? You know, I didn't create it. Yeah. I didn't create it saying, okay, I'm going to be here for 10 years and then I'm dropping the mic and I'm out. You know, type of thing. There is no end. There is no end game. We don't have an end game. TPA is just kind of its own thing now. You know, it kind of drives itself and we're kind of along for the ride. There are new doors that open with new technologies and we embrace them. We certainly have embraced Periscope. I do a lot of TPA periscoping and we love that connection, that instant, immediate connection with fans. Same with Twitter and other social media methods. And as other things come online, we will embrace those too. Just see where this journey takes us. But regardless, you know, TPA happened at the right time. I had the right supporters in people like Don Dorsey and Tony Baxter and Marty Sklar and the people at, you know, Knott's and Universal. And, everybody and their mother has a blog now, right? Every 13-year-old that's a fan. Everybody's got a blog now online. And it's just so fortunate that we were just kind of in the right place at the right time. What a crazy theme park adventure it's been, you know? So we look forward to what comes in the future and we take it in stride and we embrace it. You know what? We're just going to ride this e-ticket all the way and until it has come to a full and complete stop. And I don't even know when that's going to be. So we take every day and every year and every project and who knows, but we certainly don't show any signs of slowing down now. And we're ready just to keep taking, we take our slogan is we take people on a ride through the past, present, and the future. I don't see that stopping anytime soon.
Well, the future's going to keep coming, so you got to keep prepared for it.
We're ready. We're ready for whatever it brings.
So as we're wrapping everything up, we talked a little bit about this, but I kind of wanted to hear your take on this. Universal Studios Hollywood is. It seems to be in a metamorphosis from what it used to be and what sure. it's you know, because what it was the tram tour, which was a peak of an actual working studio, and then here's a few other diversions once you get off the tram tour, and now it's like, and then you know, then they've over the years been bringing over attractions that are at Universal Orlando. Although I do believe Jurassic Park was here first.
Yep, it was.
But overall, it's you can kind of experience similar attractions in both parks. But now it seems
it seems that it's growing into something else, and kind of what your take on that is.
Yeah, Universal is something that I grew up with as a kid. And it's unique here in Southern California because it is obviously one of the major theme parks here in California. It was never designed to be a theme park. Mm-hmm. It was first and foremost, it was a working movie and television studio, and it kind of had this theme park that was shoehorned into it over the years, really with the studio tour, which is unique, and we love the studio tour, even though it's really, really dated, you know, and you go through every part of the back lot and they're like, well, this is the War of the Worlds set. And you're like, War of the Worlds was how many years ago?
Right. Well, they're never getting rid of that.
It is by nature. It's very dated, you know, and you go through the Jaws attraction and God bless them. We love Jaws, right? But damn, dude, that is like so old, you know, the whole Jaws thing and the earthquake, you know, and all that. But we love it. We do love it. We don't want to be without it. And our hearts hurt when King Kong burned down.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was a great Bob Gurr attraction that Bob created. You know, that's this beautiful Kong animatronic, the largest that had ever been made before. And so we grew up with all that, right? So we love Universal. The past several years have been the most explosive growth spurt ever for Universal Studios Hollywood. It's going through tremendous change now. It's not slowing down. There is more change coming. You know, there are more attractions that are going to be coming online. You know, they did take out the iconic soundstage. You know, it's 28 they took out, and that's going to be a new attraction down there. You know, the word on the street is that all the CSI sound stages, they're going to go, and that possibly could be where they put Nintendo. So the park is expanding, and it's expanding rapidly. And then, of course, the question on every Potterhead's mind is, are we going to get Diagon Alley?
Yes.
And, you know, that I would say that that's probably inevitable. And it's a matter of time. And they say, well, where are they going to put it? And I said, anywhere they want. Because when they open Diagon, that is like a printing press for cash.
Yeah.
And they know that. Potter doesn't, you know, now they've got the whole new generation of Potter films coming, you know, Fantastic Beasts and all that. This franchise is not slowing down. And they know that it is a cash cow. They've got an amazing relationship with Warner Brothers. And it's really allowed them to go to this whole next level with their attractions. You know, and let's face it, the practical movie set and the Metro sets and the back lot, yeah, they're used, but are they used as much as they used to be? No, not even 10 years ago, right? I mean, it's more then. Now everything is just green screen, right? It's all digital. You need a backdrop of New York. Well, you're gonna rent out, you know, the New York, the back lot area there and pay God knows how much for that. For day, you know, several days of shooting, or are you going to have a digital team in Santa Monica recreate, you know, New York from 1940, you know,
right,
for a fraction of the cost, probably. So the movie studio is having to evolve. So it's a very interesting time for Universal Studios Hollywood now, and you know, we're Uni fans. We have a long relationship. TPA has a long relationship with Universal. Johanna is a hardcore. Anybody that knows Johanna, man, we're at Potter all the time, and she is the biggest Potterhead. She loves Wizarding World, whether it's here, whether it's Florida, whether it's Hogsmeade, whether it's Diagon, doesn't matter, man. She is all over that so much, and so we're there quite often. And we really support what they're doing here. It's what an exciting time here for people that are Universal fans. I personally think that obviously even though I grew up with it here and I have a special place in my heart for it here, nothing can come close to their reach in Orlando. I mean, the Universal property is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right? It's amazing between the studio and between Islands of Adventure. Are you kidding me? It's amazing.
Volcano Bay looks pretty.
What they're doing in Orlando is great, you know, but what they're doing here is also really good too. And I think that we'll see the studio slowly shrink, and we will see the theme park slowly expand, And I think that in the next 10 years, we're going to see even more explosive growth here in Los Angeles. You know, you keep hearing that they're going to bring a new hotel online and that it's probably going to be a themed hotel. So there's a lot of really exciting possibilities coming online here for Hollywood. So it's a great time to be a Uni fan here too. And we're certainly fans of Universal. And I think that what has happened here has been unprecedented in the history of Universal Studios Hollywood. And, you know, as fans and as TPA, we've been very honored to be in the middle of that. You know, Johanna, we were there for the soft opening when Potter opened a year ago. And Johanna got ticket number one. She was the first guest to walk into Hogsmeade on its soft opening day.
Wow.
And so these are memories that are very important that we cherish as fans. And they're great milestones as TPA, you know, getting to share all that with people by way of Periscope or videos or, you know, however we share it. And it's what a great journey, you know, what a great journey that we're on together. And certainly Universal is playing a huge role in that now here in Southern California.
So, wow. So you see it becoming more of a theme park and less of a studio as the years go on?
Yeah, I do. I do. When you're talking about sound stations, you know, they get rented out to make commercials or to make TV shows or movies or whatever. But, you know, they sit empty for a long time. Right. Mm-hmm. And when you've got something like Hogsmeade making bank every day. Right. And I'm not talking Gringotts. I'm talking legit bank. Right.
No galleons or whatever.
Yeah. 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 When they're making a ton of money. I mean, you're going to have a soundstage sitting there waiting to be maybe rented by a production company, or you're going to have something like Diagon Alley that, you know, is going to make, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, if not more, a day in revenue. I mean, the writing's on the wall. The theme park is going to be making a lot more money. Probably already is. I don't know the numbers, but I would imagine now that Hogsmeade is here, the studio side of it and the theme park side of it, they've got to be slugging it out. And I would imagine that those numbers are pretty damn even at this point.
Wow. And plus, there's so many other movie studios in very close proximity that, with other sound stages that could be rented or used.
Yeah, they are. I mean, everybody's got sound stages and everybody uses Universal. I mean, Disney uses Universal, Warner Brothers uses Universal, and they've got their own lots too. But the reality is, God, everything is just really kind of going digital these days, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the need for big metro sets like we have at Universal or massive sound stages just becomes less and less all the time. And on one hand, it's sad. On the other hand, it's, you know, kind of expected with digital evolution. And it's going to be interesting. But I think that ultimately the theme park side of Universal wins. I really do.
Well, that's exciting to hear.
I mean, it's kind of sad because, you know, we always want the studio tour. But on the other hand, you know, time marches on. It's not slowing down. It's not waiting for anybody. And there will come a time when, you know, the studio tour is just not relevant anymore.
Yeah, I guess so. But I think that's a long ways away because there's so much to the tour. There's so much. You're not going to get rid of everything on the tour like overnight. You know what I mean?
So No. It's got years.
Yeah.
But I would say, you know, in its longevity timeline, I would say that it's probably in its sunset at this point. You know, it's expensive to run. It's a really expensive operation to have all those tour guides. You know, and again, the IPs that are on the tour, you know, you got to take a look at it, right? You got to step back and look. Let's see. There's Jaws. There's Earthquake. There's Wisteria Lane. And how long has Desperate Housewives been off TV now?
Yeah.
You know, there's the War of the Worlds set, you know. There's, you know, Falls Lake, which the last thing they shot there that you could really see with the Sully movie, you know, the Tom Hanks film. Mm-hmm. With Clint Eastwood, you know, directing it. They did shoot that there, but that's very rare that they use Fall Lake anymore, you know, for a big production. it's all kind of becoming theme park stuff. You got Fast and Furious up there now as the finale of the studio tour. And really the most endearing parts of the tour are the attractions themselves, like King Kong 360.
Right.
So slowly, I think that we are seeing the sets becoming less relevant. I mean, you know what? Yeah, it's cool to see like the Whoville set, but dude, that movie was what, like 2000?
Yeah,
it's not relevant anymore. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, if we were going through sets of movies that they had just filmed all the time, then sure. But dude, when you're driving by the cabin and they're like, "This is from The Great Outdoors," and people are like, "What the hell?" You know, it's kind of past its prime. So, you know, who knows? I do think we're in the sunset probably of the studio tour, but you're right. I'm sure there are still years left of it, but I think that eventually we will see the theme park itself encroach and expand into the lower lot and then the back lot. I think it's already happening. We're watching it happen now. And in the years to come, I think that that's where we're going to see a lot of the explosive growth at Universal.
So here's the real question. How is the Hogwarts Express going to get to from Hogsmeade to Diagon Alley down the hill on a soundstage?
Oh, man. So my thought on that is Hogwarts Express was really created to be the tool to link the two parks in Florida together.
Right.
And to really push it was a really ballsy move to say, we're going to link these two parks together. We're going to make two separate Harry Potter areas. And if you want to experience them both, you got to buy a park hopper ticket.
Yeah, it was.
Otherwise, you're the family that's left out and your kids hate you. Total ballsy move. I remember when people first started talking about that, we're like, no, they're not going to do that. Well, guess what? They did it. They did it, and it's fantastic. Universal here, the way that the footprint is, I don't know that we will ever be two gates here, right?
Yeah.
So, number one, that automatically – kind of disqualifies any really good operational reason to have a Hogwarts Express. You know, I think that depending on where they end up plopping Diagon, if when they do, it may just be within walking distance of Hogsmeade. And I'm okay with that. You know, I'm okay with Florida having Hogwarts Express and not us. If we have it, people have speculated maybe it's a simulator, you know? But I think that kind of the magic, the thing that's mind-blowing about Hogwarts Express in Florida is you get on at a different physical location and you get off this train ride in a completely different park, and that's mind-blowing, right? You know what's coming, and it's still what the hell when you get off because it's awesome and you're a completely different place, right?
Yeah, you actually went somewhere.
I think that you would lose some of that if it was just a simulator, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know, because in Florida, it's an actual honest to God means of transporting people between parks. Here, we may not need that. So I think that it's very plausible that if we do get Diagon in the future, it may not come with a Hogwarts Express.
Well, it's just something to speculate, and it's fun to talk about all this stuff.
Of course.
But I'm sure we could go on endlessly, but I'm sure we do got to wrap this up.
Dude, all but like six people are awake. Everybody's asleep. There's like six people that are riveted by this. And really, I don't know why they are, but they are. Everybody else is like passed out. But it's just been fun rambling with you. Just this open stream of consciousness, just this TPA historical vomit tonight. It's been fun talking about everything with you.
No, it's been a blast, and we'll have you back on again. Unless the ratings are low, like you said. No.
You're going to get like five downloads, and you're going to be like, oh, man, I don't know how to tell Rick this.
But, the few hours a day that you do have free time, you managed to squeeze in more activity because you are part of Midsummer Scream. So yeah. Why don't we just
that little thing?
Yeah, we don't need to get into all of it, but you do have an event that's coming up. So kind of listeners of the show know that I've been talking about it forever, endlessly. So do we get to talk about 2017? What do we got?
Yeah, well, we appreciate your support. So Midsummer Scream debuted last year at the Long Beach Convention Center. It's coming back again this year, July 29th and 30th. And you can find out everything and sign up for a newsletter at midsummerscream.org. That's where we live online. I am the convention's creative director. So right now I can tell you not a lot because it's secret.
Okay.
But I can tell you that right now I am laser focused on our Hall of Shadows. Hall of Shadows is a section – we have a 92,000 square foot show floor. And Hall of Shadows takes up a section of that that's roughly the size of a football field. And it's a dark zone. And last year we had 9 haunted attractions in it, little mini haunts. This year we're going to have 14. And so that's expanded. And it's a dark area that it's just – it's like you're at a theme park at night with fog and roaming monsters. And you're going to have 14 different haunted attractions to preview and sample. In Hall of Shadows. That's been my big focus so far.
Cool.
As well as putting together we're starting to put together some of the larger scale panels and presentations. You know, every year we have the major theme parks and major haunts come out and do big presentations for everybody. We're certainly working on that right now and getting everybody locked in. We are planning a phenomenal Saturday night party that everybody had better come to because it's going to be just fantastic. And once we drop the information about that and the details of what that's going to be this year, I think people are going to lose their minds.
I can't imagine. You had Oingo Boingo minus Danny Elfman last year. That was
– Yeah, last year we came out swinging. We had Oingo Boingo perform, and that was kind of a pet project of mine because that's my favorite band of all time. So it was something that I've always wanted, and I kind of got my way last year.
Nice.
So it was wonderful to have them with us for our inaugural year. We've got something bigger and better planned and more exciting this year, and can't wait to reveal that. And again, we're going to have fantastic, you know, we encourage everybody to cosplay and dress up in their costumes. And we're going to have panels and presentations and amazing vendors on the show floor. Again, of course, Hall of Shadows is coming back, like I've said. That's pretty much the same footprint as last year. We're just cramming a lot more in there this year.
Nice.
And I'm really excited about that. Our theater is going to have amazing world-class presentations that we're putting together for you guys now. And it's just going to be a weekend of just crazy, crazy fun. And, you know, lots of people are wondering, and I think it's safe to say that we're going to do our best to bring back the black cat adoptions again this year. That's something that we just kind of like added on last year, and people lost their minds when we said we were going to have little black kitties for adoption. People just thought that was the best thing in the world, and our social media lit up. It was crazy how people got so excited about this black cat adoption. So certainly we're looking into that because we want to get all these little fur babies. We want to get them forever homes with everybody.
Nice.
And so everything that you loved about Midsummer last year is coming back bigger and better this year. And we are just, we are full steam ahead on it. And the whole team feels really, really good at this point where we are.
Well, that's a bold statement because I loved everything about it. And I know it's, you know, I'm talking to you and we're chatting and you think it's blowing smoke, you know, but it is one of the most favorite conventions I've ever been to in my life. So,
well, I really appreciate that. And it's something that, you know, I won't say it's easy. But you know what? When you have a community like we have here in Southern California, it's not hard. And so when it's a coming together of everybody that's into the Halloween and the haunt and the horror community here in SoCal, especially, man, it is just it's lightning in a bottle, man. Mm-hmm. And there's something that's just the it's the intangible magic. You can just feel it in the air, right? People are so excited to be there, and it's, mm-hmm. and it's honest to God community, right? And that's what keeps us so excited about it. And dude, we're already planning 2018, so I mean, plan wise, 17 is pretty much, you know, halfway in the bag. We're already talking about laying groundwork already for 18. That's what we're thinking. Wow. At this time.
Nice.
So, you know, we're just getting started. with this, man. So we're really ready to bring you the show that you guys love, and we're going to keep growing it, and we're going to keep embiggening it, and it's going to be something that hopefully everybody looks forward to every year, you know, every summer.
Well, awesome. Well, you heard it right here. So, well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing these tales of time before the internet.
Oh, my God.
If you can imagine it.
Fanzines back when everything was black and white. Yeah.
It oversaturated. That gives me a warm, fuzzy feeling thinking about that stuff. But
Well, I'm glad. I'm sure that somebody finds it interesting. It is interesting. It's funny because I've talked so many, you know, years now about like how we all started and all this stuff. It kind of all sounds like rambling to me, which I'm sure it sounds like rambling to a few other people. But it is interesting, and there are a lot of fans now. We've got a lot of young fans that follow TPA, and so being able to go back, you know, once in a while and share our history and talk about things like this. Mm-hmm. It's a treat, and it's something that we certainly do not take for granted. And we are very proud of our history and the legacy that we've made. And, you know, we're very honored that we were able to blaze the trails that we did with different parks, especially Knott's with Halloween Haunt. And, you know, we don't forget that. And no matter where we go tomorrow, we always look back on our history with great fondness and great humility, right? It's very humbling that people have welcomed us and you know, we've kind of become part of a lot of fans. We have a lot of fans that come up and say, oh, I work, you know, this theme park now, or I work at Haunt or whatever, you know, because we grew up as TPA fans.
Oh,
and
wow.
We always to do that. So, yeah. And we get that a lot, actually. And that's really, dude, it's overwhelming. And it's great that we've been able to really be part of a much bigger collective journey of fans from different generations and kind of bring them all together. Right.
Sure.
So it's been our honor and our privilege, and we're not slowing down.
That's awesome. Wow. And I could just say, because of the efforts of TPA, which led to you guys being involved with Scare LA.
Uh-huh.
When I moved back to California, 2 years ago, whatever, it's all blur. And myself and frequent contributor to the show, my girlfriend Shannon, who runs Nightmarish Conjurings, and the first thing we do is we literally day, like the next day after we first got to California, it was the first day of Scare LA. So we just jumped right in, and it was the most amazing way for me to return home, but for Shannon to mm-hmm. come to this new community. And if we had, if for some reason we had not gone to Scare LA, I really think that our paths of everything that we've done and accomplished since we moved back here would have not been the same. There was so much that I could trace back to just going mm-hmm. to that 2015 event mm-hmm. that, And in hearing the history of everything that you've accomplished, it's a part of that, you know,
sure.
you know, like if you hadn't accomplished everything you had and got involved in that, you know, in that show, then it wouldn't have existed, because there really was nothing else like it. And,
right.
And then you take the next level to Midsummer Scream. It's like, You could have been like, oh, I'm just not going to do this fanzine. I'm just going to hang out with my friends. And then all this stuff doesn't exist. You know,
like... it's kind of weird, right? It's the butterfly effect, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a butterfly in China farts and suddenly there's Midsummer Scream or
right.
something like that.
Right.
So, but, you know, joking aside, yeah, I mean, and that's something that we hear from a lot of people say, you know, we met each other, or we started our own career path because of, you know, this, or coming to your show and meeting so and so, and we love that, right? That is just one of the amazing fruits of this labor. And you know, you and Shannon have been very supportive, and we certainly appreciate that, and are very grateful to you guys for your friendship and your professional support. And so we go into Midsummer 17 with the burden. We know that a lot of people look to us and they want bigger and better, and so we certainly feel the weight of that.
Yeah.
But I can say that we are very confident in that we are going to deliver something that we are going to melt minds this summer.
All right. Well, I can't wait. We'll have to we'll probably bring it back on right before then, just to get everyone all geared up for it.
Yeah, we'll bring the crew on, and we can talk to you, and it'll be fun. We'll get Johanna and David and Claire and Gary, and the whole group can come on and talk about Midsummer once more. The details have been revealed.
That'll be awesome. All right. Well, thanks for coming on.
You bet, man. Thank you so much for having me. And again, it's been my pleasure to spend some time with you tonight, talking about everything.
If you would like to contact us here at Creepy Kingdom, you can do so by emailing us creepykingdom@gmail.com. And to check out our original videos, such as the Creepy Quest series, our articles, our awesome fan art and cosplay, all that fun stuff, links to all of our social media, your one-stop shop is creepykingdom.com. And once again, if you love Haunted Mansion, you're going to want to check out the website to the documentary that we're working on, foolishmortalsdoc.com. Well, until next time.
Keep it creepy. I have to go now. It's midnight. Pleasant dreams.